The Navy Department will probably believe what happened here, said Hunt, looking around his wrecked ship with growing anger. I'll be lucky if I don't get court-martialed and drummed out of the service. But strangely, when Hunt and his crew returned to the United States, there was no board of inquiry, a very unusual circumstance. It was as if the Secretary of the Navy and the Admirals wanted to sweep the incident quietly under the carpet. To Captain Hunt's surprise, he was elevated in rank to full captain before his honorable retirement. Congress authorized $45,000 to raise the Kearsarge from the reef and tow her home to a shipyard. But it was found that natives from nearby islands had set her on fire to salvage her brass, copper, and iron. Her guns were removed, and the salvagers returned to port, leaving her hulk to disintegrate in a coral tomb. July 15, 2003, the South Pacific Ocean. If the disaster had been planned months in advance, with meticulous insight and judgment, it could not have been more catastrophic. The luxurious cruise ship, Emerald Dolphin, was on fire, and no one on board had the slightest trace of suspicion of the danger. Yet flames were slowly devouring the interior of the ship's wedding chapel, located amidships just forward of the sumptuous shopping village. On the bridge, the officers went about their watch oblivious to the pending disaster. None of the ship's automatic fire warning systems hinted at a problem. The console, with its schematic profile of the entire ship that displayed every fire warning indicator, was a sea of green lights. At 4 a.m., the passengers were all asleep in their staterooms. The bars and lounges, magnificent casino, nightclub, and ballroom were empty as the Emerald Dolphin plowed the South Seas at 24 knots on a cruise from Sydney, Australia, to the islands of Tahiti. The Emerald Dolphin was on her maiden voyage. She did not have the flowing, elegant lines of other cruise ships. Her hull looked more like a giant hiking boot with a huge disc in the center. The entire superstructure of six decks was round and circled 150 feet beyond and above both sides of the hull and 50 feet over the bow and stern. The pride of the Blue Seas Cruise Lines, the new ship would unquestionably receive a 6-star rating and was expected to become a very popular vessel. The marine architects of the Emerald Dolphin had gone over the top, creating ultra-modern glitz in the 5 dining rooms, 3 bar and lounge areas, the casino, ballroom, theater, and staterooms. Glass in wildly different colors abounded throughout the ship. Chrome, brass, and copper swirled on the walls and ceilings. All the furniture was created by contemporary artists and celebrity interior designers. The sports deck featured a short 4-hole golf course, Olympic-sized swimming pool, basketball court, and a huge workout gym. A shopping avenue 2 city blocks long rose 3 decks high and might have been taken from the Emerald City of Oz. The staterooms were circular with no sharp corners. The beds were raised with extremely soft mattresses, beamed with soft overhead lights. The bathrooms had built-in chambers that dispersed mist, spray, rain, or steam amid a jungle of flowering tropical plants that looked as though they had been grown on an alien planet. No passenger who went to bed that night would have thought that the old Grim Reaper was about to swing his scythe at the Emerald Dolphin. Captain Jack Waitkiss made a brief inspection of the upper decks before retiring to his cabin. Old by most standards, Waitkiss was only 5 days away from his 65th birthday. He had been named commander of the Emerald Dolphin's maiden voyage in honor of his distinguished service to the company. He made one final call to the bridge and was told all was normal before he drifted off to sleep. At 4:10 a.m., Second Officer Charles McFerrin thought he caught a distinct whiff of smoke as he made a routine tour of the ship. Mystified because no alarm had been sounded, he followed the acrid scent along the shopping avenue until he stood in front of the wedding chapel. Sensing heat on the other side, he pulled the door open. The interior of the chapel was a raging mass of flames. Stunned, McFerrin stumbled backward. He quickly recovered and called the bridge on his radio communicator. "Wake up, Captain Waitkus. We have a fire in the chapel. Sound the alarm, program the damage control computer, and engage the fire control systems." First Officer Vince Sheffield automatically turned to the fire systems console. "McFerrin, are you sure? We have no indication here." "Trust me," McFerrin shouted into the mouthpiece. "It's an inferno, and it's out of control."
"Are the sprinklers activated?" Sheffield demanded.
"No, the fire extinguishing system is not operating, and there was no heat alarm."
Sheffield was at a loss. Staring at the console that showed all was well, he wasted precious seconds vacillating before he finally called and reported the blaze to the fire crew officer and then woke Captain Waitkus. In disbelief, the captain hurriedly dressed and went to check for himself. He entered the bridge elevator, rode down to A-deck, and approached the wedding chapel from the side opposite the crew fighting the fire. Unthinkingly, unaware of the enormity of the danger, he jerked open the door behind the altar. A storm of flame burst through the doorway and engulfed him. Captain Jack Waitkus died horribly, never knowing that his ship was about to die too.